That's out.
Oh, he's dropped it. I don't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball. And the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up.
Hey, great cricket.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Morning, Australia. We should have known this would happen. We should have known this was always going to happen. You awake this morning to news that England are on the brink of World Cup exit after their third defeat of the tournament in seven games. The greatest team to have ever entered a tournament, Australia, won overnight by 65 runs against an absolutely pathetic England side. English cricket has died so many times that it's hard to keep up, but this might be the biggest fuck-up since, well, the last one. On today's show, we're announcing our guests for the live shows. Barney Roney joins the podcast to talk England and hopefully get his views on Paul Pogba and possibly Max Rushton's phone number as well. Hashtag AskTGC tells us what England really want. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Sam Perry in Melbourne. And Pez, England were absolutely dreadful with the ball.
Okay, couple of things. Here goes, and good morning to you. Good morning. Listeners, or evening, afternoon, wherever you are around the globe. It's probably evening or the morning, judging by our analytics. Anyway, okay, it's a long summer. All right, let me just get that out there first. It's a long summer, and I don't mean that as a qualifier for what's about to come. There's a lot of matches, there's a lot of days played between Australia and England coming up. So to go the early crow would be a mistake. But they say, he goes, that you know the best predictor of future performance is past performance. And there's a paradox for England at the moment. Because their past performance, when wearing the England shirt over the last 4 years, has been, well, unparalleled in its excellence all over the globe. And yet, past performances from England in World Cup shirts have been abject. And aura and intangibility seems to be trumping statistics in this World Cup. And frankly, anything that takes me back to 1999, I'm going to jump on board. If that means egg on my face for saying, hey guys, be aware that England have won 70% of their matches. Be aware that they're knocking on the door of 400. Be aware that 60 or 40 rocks beats two guys scoring run-up all hundreds. Well, I'm happy to smash that egg all over my face. Because apparently it's 1999 again. Ricky Ponting's on the balcony. Cricket Australia have instituted the greatest wellness program or wellness initiative since Warne had the ball. And I'm on the train while it's here. I'm on the train.
Sam Perry, are you saying choo-choo, motherfucker? What is happening?
Not only...
did Australia play really well, and they did. They played really well. England was so bad. Like, how do you win the toss and then bowl, as, you know, Owen Morgan rightly did, and then waste the new ball like that? Can they fucking pitch it up? I'm so happy that Australia have won, but I'm also angry that England didn't play the way that I want them to play. Jofra Archer has not bowled very well this tournament. Like this, he did not bowl well yesterday. And there's been a couple of other instances where he hasn't blown away teams as we thought he might, or even have the impacts that we thought that he might. I think Mark Wood has been their best bowler this tournament. And that, I think, that again proved rightly so yesterday. I thought Wokes bowled okay as well. But for Australia to get 285 on that wicket, I mean, the commentators were saying with about 10, 15 overs to go, saying, like, Australia really stuffed this up, you know, like they were looking at 331 stage. That wicket was never a 280 wicket, ever. I mean, you bowl well with new ball there, and Australia's all out for 130, 140. I mean, I thought par was probably about 220. It was probably par, 230, probably par. And then beyond that, I mean, England going to this tournament trying to hit 500. Fuck, can you get to 220 a couple of times first, lads? The batting's all over the place. Ben Stokes batted superbly yesterday. Australia tumble overnight, 89, backing up some runs he scored in the previous match as well. The rest of the batting is falling apart, though. Jason Roy looks a huge miss. It's just all falling apart, Pezza, and now they've got to play India. The other teams are probably going to catch up to them in the next game, and then it's all going to come down to the last game. You know, reading some reports overnight that, you know, England still could win the World Cup, and they still could, absolutely. But I remember having a conversation with you and Dave before the tournament, saying, like, there's been some chat about this team, this England team being, you know, as good as the great Australian teams. Fuck that. Oh, my God, they are folding, Pez.
Yeah, I mean, where were they yesterday? Because I think the entire operation was sloppy.
Yep.
It was sloppy from the outset.
Mm-hmm.
There were some Cricviz stats suggesting that they were merely unlucky with the ball. You know, they weren't.
No.
And you've covered that. That, you know, on that wicket, they conceded 123 runs in 23 overs before taking their first wicket.
Yep.
Watching Australia get to that total on a really sporting wicket, I mean, I was going to say it brought back memories, but I have no memories of Australia ever being able to do that.
No, not in England.
I mean, not being able to expose Australia on bad wickets. God, I mean, they've been... Australia's been abject on bad wickets for a decade.
Mm.
And we feared that. I mean, we were texting each other just with Australia none for 50 going, this feels like a, you know, one for 60 all out 97 kind of day, but it wasn't.
Mm.
They were sloppy with the ball there and lacked plans. They were sloppy in the field. There was overthrows. There was misfields, easy misfields. There was a strange silence around Lords, so that might have just been a class factor. I did enjoy a lot of the... I don't mean that in a bad way, necessarily, but no. I did enjoy, like, the endless shots to the VIP rooms. You know, Stephen Fry, Ed Sheeran, yes. Matt Bellamy from Muse.
Yes.
Stuart Broad up there on the waters, no doubt sparkling waters on some kind of sponsor arrangement.
Yeah.
I was like, I wonder what that conversation's worth. It was. But anyway, I digress. And they kind of, you know, it was funny because a lot of the conversation later in Australia's innings became about Australia's limitations with the bat. What's the best position for Khawaja if there's one at all? Where should Smith be batting? Why can't, you know, Stoinis fail again? Glenn Maxwell, what are the conditions that he needs to succeed in? Because it's, you know, it's a really narrow set, it would appear. I mean, with Glenn Maxwell, like, he comes out with 90 balls to go. And you sort of get the feeling now, oh, that's too many balls. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But anyway, but maybe that was the part of the match that actually played, you know, according to the script. England bowled a little bit better. Australia struggled a little bit, but they already had too much on the board. And, yeah, I mean, once Behrendorf went through Vince, oh, and what a beautiful ball it was.
Mm.
Oh, it was pretty much downhill from there, mate. But I don't know. What has happened? What has happened to England? Has somebody got photos? Is somebody having sex with someone else's wife? Well, I mean, this is the kind of like, it's the kind of drop off that you can only put down to something happening behind the scenes. Unless by behind the scenes we mean of just a vulnerable national culture at tournaments.
Mate, it comes back to the same thing we spoke about last time in the loss, which is a funny thing that I didn't think we'd be saying at the beginning of this World Cup. Like, the weather hasn't helped them because they've been playing on wickets which bring the bowlers into it, which just hasn't been the case over the last few years.
I mean, at least we know that England's weather can be up and down. They've developed a game for flat tracks, not necessarily sun, but, you know, flat track bull is becoming a cliche with England. But, like, is that exposing a weakness in what they've developed? I mean, we know that England's, like, the conditions can be sporting. So why develop a 400 only side that can't kind of don't have different gears?
I know, mate. It's weird, but the thing is, it's worked. You know, and it's worked up to the point where they chased like 350 17 times against Pakistan, literally the tournament before the World Cup started. So like
Pakistan beat them.
And then Pakistan beat them. And then Sri Lanka, who, as Mark Butcher said in the podcast on the weekend, has been the worst team that he's seen for the last year. Couldn't agree more with my mate Butch. Australia are now the greatest team that's ever played World Cup cricket after losing. Wasn't that the stage we lost like 23 out of 25 games or something? Now we've won like 11 out of 12.
You mean the greatest in relation to all the other Australian World Cup teams, and I would agree. This is the greatest iteration.
I just spent the entirety of the foundation of the competition since the 70s, including the Great West Indian teams as well. I guess we should talk about the actual game itself rather than just the overall implications and the factors surrounding this.
Finch, just before we do, here goes. Okay. Firstly, how good is context in cricket? How much does these going into this match, you thought, Australia can really strike a blow here against England.
Yeah.
You know, they can really make life difficult for them, and they've done that, you know, by playing a great game. And you just cannot get that kind of narrative arc going into a bilateral match. And what does it mean? These World Cup matches, they also kind of expose bilateral matches for the kind of exhibition sort of style that they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not a revelation. But, God, it's great to watch cricket that has serious implications that strike at the heart of the vulnerability of a national culture when it's not your own country.
So good, mate. And it's good when your team wins to decimate another team's entire sporting fabric as well. That also helps. Mate, I completely agree. And, you think of even, the T20 World Cups and stuff, it still feels exhibition-y. Even though that has context as well, the 50-over stuff, you know, in a World Cup sense is just fantastic. But the rest of the time, it's, kind of junk.
Well, it's the rise of, the resurrection of, there being nowhere to hide with the length of 50-over cricket.
Because yes.
One thing you can say about the England side is that they're the team that's trying to bridge the T20 gap to 50-over cricket. And it's been great to watch, you know, to the point where we're now kind of, you know, where the hipster journos, like myself, are discarding, you know, previous World Cup or tournament play or DNA or anything like that or pressure. And just going, no, we're just talking raw X's and O's now. England bat at this strike rate, whatever, doesn't matter who gets it or whatever, you know, but that's wrong. Ponting on the balcony and history is more important. Okay.
Mate, let's talk about the Australian bat innings. Aaron Finch scored his 7th 100 against England. Funny statistic shown up because he got his 100, obviously, overnight, and then got out the next ball. Jofra Archer bounced him, caught it fine leg. And, the conversation then was, you know, it's a bit of a problem. Aaron Finch, when he scores 100 against England, he doesn't seem to go on. And they showed a stat, and, his 5 most recent 100s against England, just say that sentence again, his 5 most recent 100s against England. He's got 7 overall, 5 most recent ones, though. He was all out between 100 and 108. Not really a problem, is it? I mean, I sort of see the point of just, you know, you get to 100, then you can explode. I'm going to take my opening bats and scoring 100 against England 7 times, though. So that's he's amazing. Pretty sure he's leading run score at the moment. And then Warner at the top as well. He'd be right up there in the run scoring charts as well. He might be third or even second. He went past 500 runs for this World Cup tournament. Incredible. They put on 123. This opening partnership has failed once, and that was against the West Indies. The rest of the time, I think their lowest opening partnership is in the low 50s. Went past 100 again, 123. I mean, it's an unbelievable foundation, which the conversation then seems to be, but then who bats 3? Yeah, where does Khawaja finish? It's a funny problem to have.
It is a funny problem to have. I think that you've kind of, in one way, explained why it's been difficult for Khawaja in this World Cup. Because I think Khawaja's inclusion at 3 doesn't legislate for Warner and Finch putting on 120 every time they bat.
Yeah.
It means he comes in after 25 overs and there's not really a spot for him anymore. I mean, Khawaja's role is pretty much to be a secondary opener. if somebody comes out and to keep it ticking over.
That's right.
You know, we know his limitations. He can go at 5 and over. You know, sort of, he can strike at about 80, you know, 85 to 90. And when he comes in after 25 overs, Smith's a better number three. Than him. I mean, Smith's a better number three than him at any point in the match. But if you're going to have him in the side, he's really valuable at the start. Mm. And then as the game goes on, he doesn't have much to offer. And then the question is, well, why don't you just bump Smith up? It's like, well, there's no spot for Quadra after that.
Yeah.
There's a better 4 than him, 5, 6, 7, even probably Cummins at 8, maybe not. So, you know, Smith, like Warner and Finch will fail at some point, and Quadra hopefully will get a chance to actually play his game. But, you know, it's not his fault. It's a failure of selection. It's a failure of bringing somebody into the side that might be a little bit more flexible. We'll probably talk about Matt Wade later. You know, who I think would slot beautifully into that side. Well, though I doubt he will.
I mean, let's talk about Wade now, mate. I mean, for those who don't know, probably the English people wouldn't know that Wade scored. He's in the Australian A Tour and he's scored a couple of blistering hundreds, real quick hundreds, against some county attacks, which mean as much as you want it to mean, I suppose. But he was in just an incredible form all last summer, Australian Domestic Player of the Year, and the summer just gone, golden summer. Doesn't necessarily want a wicketkeep. I think Carey's done a fantastic job. He's probably his second or third best player in the team at the moment. Carey just doing a fantastic job, especially down the order batting at 7. The gloves are good as well. Wade in the team, or at least in the squad, is an interesting one, because Khawaja doesn't fit when he comes in. You know, anything like 20 overs and later, it doesn't really work. I like the idea of Wade, but then. I don't know. I mean, Australia have won every game except for one game in this tournament.
Oh, yeah, they won't do it. Khawaja's insurance.
Yeah,
you know that's what he is. He's just a second. He's a secondary opener if they lose an early one, and they probably will lose an early one. And you know, it's not cost them so far really, because the tournament scores have been low. 280's been good. They've been able to park those scores, which is the part of the verb now. Park, to park any score,
mate.
The elite level. I just want to associate myself with that, but it's not that big a problem. But you can see it toward the back end when they're not able to really take off.
Yeah,
but you know, the script's been rewritten. The rule book's been torn up. You know, this, like, hitting 150 off the last 10 overs doesn't seem to be that necessary anymore.
I was just thinking about how England bowled to, especially the top of the innings. I think they got it right towards the end, even to the point where how Cummins got out. Just, it was just a leg cutter from Wokes, and he was caught behind. And at that point, I was thinking, like, Australia's already got too many here. I mean, if you're doing that with an old ball where guys are trying to score quickly, that's, and you just nicked him off genuinely in the front foot.
Playing and missing, mate, like the 44th, 45th.
Exactly. I don't know how international cricketers don't pick that up. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But, like, England bowl, and I said this, you know, text last night, so I'm just going to repeat that our message is now word for word, verbatim. Like, England were bowling like club cricketers who got excited when they're playing on that one ground a year which has like a bit of pace and carry, where like the ball gets the keeper above his knees and they get really excited by bowling back of the leg. Or like when like England or like touring teams go and play at Brisbane or the Wacker, where there's more bounce and they get excited. And yeah, it looks good when like Warner's, you know, playing on off the back foot and it's nipping around and like all the slips get to go "Way!" and making weird noises like that. But like, it doesn't actually do anything. Like, how many balls did England bowl which would have hit the stumps? I mean, I don't understand how like international level cricketers who are so much better, they're so much better than me and never will be, but how do they not know, well, let's bowl a few balls, might hit the fucking stumps for a bit, let's bring a few dismissals, modes of dismissal into play, you know, bold LBWs. You know, Finch was almost LBW early on. They had a review, would have clipped leg stump. It was like one of the only balls that would have hit the stumps or even been near the stumps. The rest of the time it was back of a length, it wasn't particularly at the stumps. It was, you know, it gave him width. They bowled short. It's just like they grew up playing cricket in England. I mean, Jofra Archer didn't, but surely you understand that, like, you need to bowl the other teams out. This might be the problem with the way they've played over the last 4 years, and just like all their batting exploits and chasing 500 and like all the depth in their batting might have been just hiding some. It might have been hiding some flaws in their bowling, where it's just like, well, we'll just bowl 50 overs. You guys get what you want to get, and we'll just chase them down. Because Their bowling yesterday, how Australia got 285, I can't reiterate enough. And maybe it's just overcompensating for saying how good England are. And I'll reiterate, they might win the tournament still. They were crap yesterday, England. They were crap.
I mean, anyway, the side doesn't seem fit for purpose at the moment, he goes. I mean, that's all it is, really. You talk about the bowling. I think one phenomenon in professional sport is that guys get programmed so much, they get roboticized so much that one of the great opportunities you can have as a professional sports team is to introduce the element of surprise. You know, when you ask professional teams or players to have to think or change what they've been programmed to do, then you can find out, you know, who's legitimate. And you're right. I mean, the English guys should be able to manage conditions, especially in terms of bowling tactics, far better than Australians. But, like, it is one-day cricket. They probably didn't legislate that much for, like, a green seamer at Lords. They're probably used to bowl. They probably had plans to bowl on length or back of a length, Warner and Smith, to tuck them up on their hip and stuff like that. I mean, England's had a fascination with, you know, breaking the 150 barrier now through Wood and Archer. So that doesn't scream line and length and nibbling it about when they need to. You know, the great charge against England side is that while they are able to do things no sides can do, it's very rigid and it's very conditional on how the wicket's playing. And so they're praying for sun and flat ones. And yeah, I still think they could win the comp if those two things are there. You know, let's pray for more cloud and for more grass.
Well, mate, if the wickets stay the same as they have been this tournament, England cannot win the tournament. I mean, I think they're gone. I think if the wickets are flat, they've got the best team for flat wickets. India would rival them as well. But if there's a bit in it, like, I mean, you can't argue with the facts. England have already lost 3 games out of 7 this tournament. Like, unless the wickets are flat, England cannot and will not win the World Cup. It's astonishing. Mate, let's get into the bowling innings before we speak to Barney Ronay on the phone. Berendorf, an inspired selection. Who needs Josh Hazlewood when you got Berendorf at the top taking 5 for 44? Stark doing his thing. I mean, just before I get your answer on that, I just have to say, what a ball Mitchell Stark bowled to Ben Stokes. I mean, that is an absolute peach. Ben Stokes on 89. He's the hope of England chasing down the total. Just tailed in and smashed into off stump. Mm. What a ball that is, mate.
Oh, and a bloke, like, to a bloke who's on 89 midway through the innings as well. We're not talking about at the start where the ball's talking and the batsman's new or something. So, you know, I mean, you nor I have spent much time, I can guess, on 89 in cricket. that loftier score, but when you're in, it's difficult to be yorked, you know, because you've picked up everything, especially someone as good as Ben Stokes. So it speaks to Stark's, you know, the sizzle with which he was bowling. But, I thought, you know, Berendorf and Stark, I thought, why have two left-armers? You know, you sort of lose the variety by having two of them. But, yeah, I mean, that, you know, Berendorf's ball to Vince was just beautiful and set them, you know, really set them on the right track. He was able to get it moving, And, I mean, I don't want to hark back onto England, but, like, why do they go back to playing two spinners on that kind of wicket? It was really strange to me. Like, that, it was just a wicket that was begging for the ball to be stood upright and hitting the seam consistently.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Australia's bowling performance was excellent, led by those two guys. There was a funny, there was a tweet, I think, or a quote from Kevin Peterson saying that Owen Morgan looked scared facing Mitchell Stark, and he was asked about it in the press conference. The translator called Kevin Peterson Ken Pearson, which is just an aside. But Owen Morgan was just sort of really sort of droll, just saying, oh, did he? Excellent. It's not how it felt. But
absolutely champed him.
Yeah, he champed him. But yeah. Yeah, a great bowling innings, and, you know, England have just done what they've done with a couple of other chasers. You know, they've just been bundled out, and we've barely seen any sign apart from Stokes of that, you know, the side is comfortable chasing anything. So I'm not going to rule them out of the tournament, but because I do think if there's sun and flat ones, then they'll be fine. But all other conditions, they're struggling. They've also got Jason Roy to come back as well, who I think is crucial for them. But, England, what happened?
Well, they might play Plunkett as well, because there's been some chat going around that England haven't lost a game with him in it, i.e. he has missed three games and they've lost all three games. Mate, just speaking about just the balance of the team, just we've gone on a little bit too long here, but we'll speak about Stoinis and Lyon. Now, I really like the Lyon inclusion, especially against England, because he's got a great record against them, especially against Moeen, a couple of left-handers as well. I mean, he bowled really nicely. What did he finish with? 9 overs, none for 43, but he bowled 28 dot balls in that time as well. I thought actually Adil Rashid was probably the pick of the bowlers in English innings, which is says a lot, given that he's a wrist spinner and a green seamer.
He looks injured too.
Yeah.
Sure, he's got a bad shoulder, and that showed towards the end. But, yeah, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, mate, I think, like, growing up in the era where, like, of watching Australia, where you could literally just, like, pick the team, and then you'd say, well, Andy Bick will be 12th man. And that was the case for, like, 15 years, where it's just like, well, that's the team. Now, that'll probably never happen again in our lifetimes, unfortunately. So, like, what I'm getting at here is, Australia are carrying Marcus Stoinis at the moment, who did bowl well. You know, 7 overs, 1 for 29, picked up a huge wicket of Joss Butler, fantastic catch by Khawaja running around on the boundary. Actually, Australia's fielding and catching was really good yesterday. Anyway, Stoinis' batting is of significant concern, because he hasn't looked like scoring a run in about 8 months. He's not getting the time of the crease that he might like, but sure, but doesn't look good. He's slow to get going, absolutely... cyanided himself batting with Steve Smith, but it doesn't look like scoring a run. But the balance of the team is just better with him in it. But I still feel like Australia are massively carrying him when he's batting six.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I guess, like, the whole spirit of this side, though, is, you know, I mean, as we know in Australian sport, some guys are more equal than others.
True.
And, like, Stoinis is so equal.
Yeah. No, we love the Stoinis, to be fair.
In the Australian side, is the spirit animal of what Australian cricket thinks it is.
Nice.
In the modern way. And they're going to persist with him, I think, while they keep winning. And that number six position, I just feel like they're so addicted to the way that number six position impacts the balance of the rest of the side as well. Mm. So just by virtue of being someone who can do both, he's going to be persisted with. And I suppose, you know, the defence you'd mount for Stoinis is, you know, again, you know, he could, now that Australia's in the World Cup final against India, and that's been decided.
That's right.
That they'll back his death bowling.
Mm.
So I think that's why he remains in the side.
Mm. Okay, mate, let's get Barney Roney on the phone, chief sports writer from The Guardian, to get his take about what on earth is happening over there in England.
Look, to be honest, I don't try and take the piss too much, but the problem is you start to get a little bit bored. So I try and do the right thing by the competition, I must admit. Wow. When I go there, I try and play conventionally, but realistically I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park. But you don't want to come out of it and people say, look at that arsehole Hodgie, you know, so...
That Brad Hodgie.
Yeah, what a prick. But, yeah, I mean, it's good fun.
Well, here goes. It's a great pleasure for you and I to introduce the next guest. We've never had him on the show before. We'll be secret about our fanboying of him as well and not let him know about it. But we've got Barney Roney joining us. He's fresh from coming from Lourdes, where he witnessed what happened today. He's the chief sports writer at The Guardian. He's on the phone. Barney, what did you see at Lourdes today?
Hi, guys. Yeah, that's a good question. I've been wondering that on the journey home. I thought Australia were really good. You know, we've been going on and on about how it's a team just built around five good bits and six not so good bits. But when those five good bits work really well, it seems like a good plan. And even during that opening partnership, it was a bit slow and, you know, dogged. You could just feel the game going away for England and feel that one team knew that they were going to win it. And for all England's talk of aggression and being so positive and fearless, I thought they looked pretty full of fear today. And you know, going out there and blazing away, hitting the ball up in the air isn't bright, clever, brash cricket. It's kind of scared cricket. And I thought they were hugely disappointing, as Australia were good.
It will be so easy for Australians, and we will do it, to just explain England's newfound fear via just old, haggard cultural tropes. But why are they? Where has this fear come from, Barney? Obviously, just take us into the camp where you know everything. But that England would have just been impregnable for 4 years, and now they're playing like the team many of us remember from, you know, the 90s. What's going on?
Well, it's a weird situation, isn't it? I mean, the ECB has made such a fuss of building up to this World Cup. You know, it's been 4 years of pouring resources into it, pouring the whole emphasis of how cricket is played and structured into having a great white ball team. But it's kind of a game of smoke and mirrors as well. Do England deserve to win a World Cup? What would it reflect if England won a World Cup? Is there a great system behind that team producing players? Well, not really. Is the game in a healthy state? Not really. Certainly, they've encouraged a really skillful group of players to go out and whack the ball. But it's kind of a team built around slogans, is how I feel, a bit like the England football team. There's a lot of fluffing and primping of the top end of it and making out that there's a whole new culture at work and a brand of cricket. But it's not a team with a great deal of depth, as you can see now that one of the openers has gone, well, both the openers have gone missing. And we have James Vincent, who doesn't look like a World Cup winning opener. And they just play one way. They've got one gear. They've forgotten how to sort of win cricket matches any other way. And today they just came up against a better team with more skill. You know, Mitchell Starc was incredible. I mean, what a bowler he is. There's no one in the England set up to match him. The openers just couldn't replicate what he did. And I think with England, they played a lot of bilateral series on flat pitches, smashed the ball around and started to believe their own hype. And it's quite fun, in a way, to see them come unstuck, as is with anyone who seems to be shrouded in hype.
But I'll just say, you sort of touched on the batting there. I'm just going through the batting order. And, like, I'd say apart from Bairstow, who hasn't looked like himself in this tournament, I think he's just got 150 and he got 27 yesterday. But apart from that, there's been a couple of first ball ducks. But apart from that, I mean, Joe Root's had a good World Cup. Obviously, Owen Morgan got that amazing 150 odd a couple of days ago. Ben Stokes seems to be batting okay. Josh Butler probably hasn't quite hit the heights that he otherwise has. But none of these guys are necessarily right out of form, and yet in the last two times they've chased, they haven't reached 220. So it's kind of a hard one to put on because, I mean, it's a good lineup in theory, I suppose, but they're not putting it together, are they?
Yeah, it's a weird, it's slightly weird batting lineup. They're so brittle about it. I think they've really missed Jason Roy, who, you know, is utterly fearless and will go out there. Today he would have gone out there and probably spanked a quick 60 and hauled the chase in. And there's no one of his level to replace him. But they're also, they don't have, I mean, Joe Root, is really important that he worked against Australia, and that didn't come off. He got brilliant delivery. But once you get past him, I suppose there's Bairstow, there's a proper batsman in there. Owen Morgan looks so uncomfortable facing Starc. He was asked at the press conference afterwards about Kevin Peterson's tweet, but he was terrified. and Ali Martin asked him about that. And if looks could kill, I mean, it was a good question, but Morgan, you know, gave it the death stare. But he just looked terribly. He played a first class game. Last first class game was in May, and he bats number 6 or 7 for Middlesex. That is not preparation for facing Mitchell Starc on a pitch where it's doing a bit. And he's coming down at 93 miles an hour. And there's no way he was going to stick out there. I just don't think there's a depth of quality or other gears there. I mean, Moeen Ali's forgotten how to bat. And they were really exposed by some very good bowling.
Barney, you wrote in a previous piece on football in relation to Manchester United. This isn't a football question. He said, after another summer of rebuilding, appears underway at Old Trafford, but attempts to recreate the philosophies and glories of previous eras look doomed to fail. I mean, a counterpoint from Australia's point of view is Ricky Ponting on the balcony. I mean, how many runs and wickets is he worth? Just from an aura and historic point of view.
Yeah, he's got a great aura. The lads are obviously responding to his aura right now. It's a difficult one, isn't it? He's funny, Ponty, isn't he? Because he's quite a good TV pundit. I mean, I think he's quite good, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's kind of astute and stuff. But as a captain, he sort of had this reputation for being, certainly in England, for being a bit robotic and basically just give it to McGrath and Warren and go through the motions. He seems to become inspirational and full of innovation in his retirement to the commentary box, which is good work if you can get it.
Bunny, we've heard previously from a number of UK journalists that Australians don't quite appreciate Mitchell Starc for the bowler that he is. I think you might have even written your piece on The Guardian this evening that you think he's the best bowler in the tournament. Do you think that Australians really fully appreciate Starc? Because I kind of think, oh, yeah, he opens the bowling. He's a great bowler. And then I'm just thinking of that ball that he bowled to Stokes. It's just it's unbelievable bit of skill. So do you think Starc might be a little bit underrated in Australia?
Well, that does seem to be the case. I was sitting next to Jeff Lemon today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of sat there raving about Starc, and Jeff just keeps looking sideways at me saying, yeah, but he had a terrible 2 years before this.
That is Jeff, to be fair.
So, you know, Jeff, give the guy a break. You know? But I think it's it's incredible. He's, 6 foot six?
Mm.
He's an incredible, swings it both ways. Can you imagine the sheer horror of facing him?
Mm.
It's a terrifying idea. You can see why coming up through the levels, people would have thought, well, I think we might have one here. he seems to have done... I mean, in white ball cricket, his record's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of strike rate, average, fifers, he's as good as anyone there's ever been. I guess we don't see his bad times, mainly because the good times seem to happen against England quite regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Barney, if England are a one-gear team who love knocking on the door of 400 and taking the game to, you know, making that bridge between T20 and 50-over cricket and then playing at home, doesn't it just follow that if they just make flat pitches, they'll win? Why don't they just make flat wickets?
We were talking about that today. It's really funny that they've come up with a style, and the one place it doesn't really work is in England when it's English conditions. Someone's not really thought this through. That game today, like, they'd have won it if they'd had Alistair Cook, Ian Bell and Jonathan Trott at the top of the order, who are the ones we agonised over for years. We seem to have come up with a World Cup that old England might have actually won, and instead we've got all these dashers. Cook would have knocked those off. He'd have got 80 in 124, and other than that, it's a weird piece of self-destruction. Probably we could have planned slightly better. Bring back old England.
Barney, when you were leaving the ground today, as you were hopping on the tube there at St John's Wood, I mean, what's the feeling amongst English people? I mean, can England still win the World Cup? I mean, it's three losses now in seven games. You know, team's a little bit dejected, failed to chase relatively low scores a couple of times, chasing three times overall. I mean, do the English public still think that, yeah, cricket's coming home?
Well, I mean, firstly, in my opinion, England shouldn't still be in the World Cup. You shouldn't lose three games out of seven and still be talking about winning a tournament. It's ridiculous. That should have been the end today. If you underachieve that badly and lose twice in a week, you shouldn't still be there. It's a bit absurd, really. Does this team deserve to win a World Cup? Well, no, not right now. But it's weird in this country. You must be well aware of English people bleating on about the game dying back and not being as popular as it once was, or being popular only among a select group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you wander around and there really isn't World Cup fever on the streets or anything like that. The real fans will still believe because, of course, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a deep strain of pessimism in all English sport, despite how it might look from the outside, being pricks to lose to and all that stuff. The English do kind of love losing. It's far more reassuring and easier on everything. And I think people are probably pretty down about it now. I think we've all started talking about how good Australia are instead and India.
We're all employing our coping mechanisms, Barney, until the next thing that happens in cricket, and then we'll just flip towards that. I still think England are a chance. They've just got to curate the wickets to be flat. Thank you so much for coming onto the show, mate. Apologies for the picture that I put up on Twitter, and that was completely my mistake.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, sadly, I have to apologise. It's fairly accurate, so I could get past that. But yeah, apology accepted.
Very good. Well, on that note, thanks for coming on the show. Hopefully we'll have you on again. See you soon.
Cheers, guys.
An absolute pleasure to speak to Barney Rone there. Pez, we're going to get into hashtag AskTGC in just a second's time, but first, a big announcement. It's a big show, this one, mate.
Big announcement.
It's a big show. You know, chief writer, chief sports writer, The Guardian, the podcast, guest show announcement, some cracking hashtag AskTGCs. Oh, and Australia just defeated English cricket.
Long summer.
No, the thing that's happened right now is the thing that'll happen forever. Mm-hmm. Pez, live show, the world tour. People know where to get tickets, greatcricketer.club. Tickets are selling fast, especially the Australian shows. You should get in, and you should get in real quick, because now that we announce the guests, they're going to sell. Both shows are going to sell out. So
we've been working hard, too, on these guests. Yep. In the true great cricket style, work hard.
Mm-hmm. Never smart.
Never smart.
Always hard.
Always hard. But you have a good voice, he goes. Drum roll it, not really, just metaphorically.
Okay.
And let them know who will be joining us.
Okay, so we are in Melbourne, July 25th at the Corner Hotel. Our guest for that is Brad Hodge, who is our most listened to podcast ever. It was a fantastic interview that we had with Brad. He is going to join us on stage at the Corner Hotel, July 25th. Then we go to Sydney.
In the pitch to him, mm-hmm. he goes, it was said to him, you can't deny our chemistry, Hodgie. You just can't deny it. And he couldn't.
He failed to deny
it. Which is why he's coming along. Brad Hodge from TGC. There's some chemistry there. I don't know what it is.
Okay, another fantastic guest that we've had over the years. To Sydney at the Comedy Store on July 31st. Tickets are almost gone for this one, so you want to get in quick. It's Steve O'Keefe who will be joining us live on stage. Sock is going to be joining us. Socky boy, mostly speaking condescendingly about himself and not being able to spin the ball, et cetera, et cetera. That's huge and true. So Brad Hodge and Steve O'Keefe are going to be joining us on stage in Melbourne and Sydney. Then, Pez, then we're heading over to the UK, as you know, for the next leg of our world tour. It's really only two legs. Where are we first? We're at Birmingham. We're at Birmingham first. And joining us on stage... it's actually quite a few joining us on stage. Gideon Hay and Pete Lawler are joining us on stage. And also Merv Hughes will be joining us at the Birmingham show. All tickets, greycricketer.club for all of these shows. That's fantastic stuff.
Not many left there either.
That's a good point, actually. That's a good point. Those are going real quick too. Where do we go next, Piz?
We go to Leeds. We're going north.
This one might be the one I'm most excited about. We're going to Leeds, and we've got Tim Bresnan coming on stage, which is just fucking awesome.
Hometown hero.
He's got a couple of days off in between T20 games. That's when the T20 blast is happening. Tim Bresnan on stage in Leeds. That is going to be so cool. I am looking forward to that the most, I think. Manchester and London shows, we're going to tease those out a little bit more. But we might as well announce the guest for the
sold out London show.
We've sold it out before we even announced the guest, which is now just a waste.
So just to be clear, this is the 13th of
August.
That's
right.
This is Tuesday, 13th of August, the night before the Lord's Test. This is the show that sold out in a day.
And you lucky people out there are getting to see the great cricket and by themselves. But we've also decided to bring along Jason Gillespie. Which is a pretty good get. I think you'll be pleased that you snapped up those tickets in a day, because Jason Gillespie will be joining us on stage. There are tickets available for the night before, the Monday night, the 12th, August 12th. Those tickets are still available. That is going to sell out as well. So get your tickets in quickly. As I said, we're going to tease out the guests for Manchester and the first London show as well. So stay tuned for that. So to recap, Brad Hodge, Melbourne, Steve O'Keefe in Sydney, Merv Hughes, Gideon Hay, Pete Lawler in Birmingham, Tim Bresnan in Leeds, Jason Gillespie for those people who snapped up the tickets in a day at Leicester Square Theatre for August 13th in London. All tickets, greatcricketer.club. You know where to get them. Come along. They're fantastic nights. They're really good fun. It's a comedy night out. You know, bring the boys, bring the girls, and just get around the boys, you know? There needs to be more getting around the boys.
Follow your own feedback to us, just to get around the boys. Practice what you preach and get around us. And Jason Gillespie, Bresnan, Gideon Hay, Pete Lawler, Murphy's, and Brad Hodgson, Steve O'Keefe.
Yeah. It's not bad, is it, mate? It's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. Okay, Pez, hashtag ICGC. This one is an absolute belter, and it comes in from Tim Spaulding, and I fast-tracked this one to get it on today's show, and I'm really glad that England lost, not Australia won, that England lost, because this fits right into the theme. Hello, lads. Huge fan of the show, says Tim Spaulding, despite being English and despite what I'm about to say. This is more of a tell TGC rather than an ask TGC. Apologies. After listening to how much pleasure you all derive from England losing to Sri Lanka and the sweaty ways that it manifested itself, I'm reminded of what Pezza, my favourite character, said a few weeks back about catch-22s. I am here to inform you that you don't want what you think you want. You think you want England, the most hyped, most talked about, most deserving team, to humiliatingly fail in a semi-final in front of the eyes of the world, a theatrical display of decolonisation. You want to watch from the other side of the world, frothing like we did when your team got done for cheating. You think you want to luxuriate in the bitter humiliation and fury that will be felt by all English cricket fans. But you're wrong. This is what we want. As a podcast that dissects the psychology behind the culture of Australian cricket fandom, I'm afraid you have failed to correctly diagnose the psychology of England fans. We want the hype. We love it. But nowhere near as much as we want the crushing failure. The excuse to fucking hate our team, to blame them for more things than even makes sense, to lodge contradictory complaints. It gives us something to talk to strangers about, legitimises the hatred we feel towards ourselves and our country. The only thing that makes the soulless journey to a horrible job on a packed shoe bearable is being able to read a posh journalist fucking tear your team apart, no longer keeping a professional emotional distance, unable to disguise their glee at spilling their white-hot fury at James Vince scoring gorgeous 20s. We want James Vince to feel like shit. We want the whole team to feel like shit because they're all so much more talented than we are. We want them to be humiliated for having the talent to make a living just playing a sport in the sun and making loads of money. How dare they be able to do what we all dream of and not us? Why can only they be happy? And you Aussies, ha! I feel sorry for you. For a brief drunken few weeks last summer, England was sun-drenched, our national football team were 1-0 up in a World Cup semi-final, everything was delirious and surreal. I briefly entertained the feeling of seeing England win the World Cup, and it sickened me. I couldn't stomach the fact that watching 24-year-old Harry Kane lifting the World Cup would be the best moment of my life. That is horrendous. Having never supported a team who has won a major cup, I can only imagine the awful feeling of trying to claim 11 people's talents and achievements as your own. It must be a stark and brutal revelation of your own inadequacy. I desperately hope England get through to the semi-final, preferably the one I'm going to, Edgbaston, and then get knocked out to a hideous Australian team, snarling and screaming in our faces at we're the first team in ODI history to lose by an innings and 250 runs, so I can sit alone in the crowd afterwards, angrily think about England's cricket team's failings rather than my own. Then I will listen to your podcast, fucking stick it into England, as you brush aside the bubbling feeling in your throats that Australia winning their 6th World Cup just makes you all realise how you'll never achieve what you want. Here goes. The most insecure member of the group will get drunk the fastest that night and make a lonely pass at Pezza, once again, my favourite character. Pezza will politely decline, then rip out a zinger because he's fucking Pezza and a stand-up bloke, role model, and probably the dad I'd choose. I will enjoy you giggling and laughing in England because I know what the laughter is hiding. Well, he was mean to me, so fuck you, Tim. No, that's good. That's a Hall of Famer. That's a Hall of Famer. Tell TGC. Not a segment we're starting. Please, just, you know.
It's already started.
Yeah, it probably has started. It's a slippery slope. Yeah. We've opened the doors. So that's what England want. Is he right, Sam?
Oh, I mean, that's kind of Freud and Orwell.
Yeah.
Rolled into one, yeah. Isn't it? You actually want your team to lose so you can feel better about yourself. Mm-hmm. It's a good characterization, as far as I've observed, of the deep psychology behind England's sporting failures. Mm-hmm. So I don't even, you know, all I can do is applaud. And of course I would applaud, because it's extremely, almost suspiciously praiseworthy of me. Which is not something that happens very often.
You've got a lot of burner accounts, fast. I've realised, over the last couple of podcasts.
It's a burner account. Yeah. It's dad, you don't have to write in anymore. It's all that kind of stuff. You know, as for you making a lonely pass at me, well, you know, you're presumptuous, Tim. It is he goes after all. So, you know, I mean, I'm stumped, really. I'm lost for words. It's a great post. Yeah. I love it. Any more? If there's any more, you know, even professional. I mean, the amount of people who've been writing in lately, he goes and saying, "Bring Dr. Happy back."
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people are requesting psychological help at the moment. Yeah. And just to be clear, as a disclaimer, if you need psychological help, go and get it.
Yeah.
Genuinely. But if you're happy to operate on the comical plane, just below that, then please keep writing in your psychological dissertations on English cricket and psychology in general.
We've unfortunately got a full set for the live show, for the Birmingham live show, but it would have been good to have Tim on stage to
I would have thought so.
Replace one of us, probably me.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that, obviously.
Sure,
but,
thanks.
We did have at our first live show in Adelaide, somebody asked a question and then end up just walking on stage to ask the question because they were doing demonstrations of the way their mum got them out playing cricket.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, in front of Ed Cowan. Yeah. So there's still a chance, Tim, if you're coming to the show.
Yeah. All right. William Stephen writes and he says, "Hi, Choppers. I lost my virginity under the covers at my club in a legendary story. Since then, I have been known around the club as the Chop King, which is obviously a huge nickname to Burden. However, here comes my dilemma. Ever since my crowning glory, I'm yet to convert on a social with the boys, which I feel is starting to raise questions with regards to the validity of my story and may result in me losing the title of Chop King, which is definitely not deserved. So in order to validate myself, should I A, focus on improving my cricket, hoping I will up my average, which is currently sitting at 19.23, in the hope this will attract more females. B, go to the gym, which in turn will of course improve my strike rate, which is currently sitting at 74.66, in the hope my striking prowess will attract the females. Or C, quit cricket and get a life which doesn't revolve around meaningless stats in the hope a girl may like me for who I really am. Surely this isn't actually possible. Thanks for your help. And maybe one day I may feel confident when people refer to me as Chopper." Thoughts?
I like this because he's had the Chop King nickname bestowed upon him. And he's actually had the courage to write in, firstly, not anonymously. His name is William.
I thought
Steve.
That as well, yeah. Yeah.
But the courage to say, "I'm not sure I'm worthy of the title." And then go on to say that one of the options he'd like to pursue is simply leaving the game of cricket and finding a girl who likes him for who he is. That's full circle. What I want to pick up on is how many people, as we've travelled across Australia, are keen to tell us stories about sexual exploits in and around the cricket wicket of their home ground or the covers.
I know.
It's so weird. Because there's a lot. There's a lot of people at our live shows or even just writing to us who are keen to tell us stories about things that they do under the covers or on the fucking square. Sexually.
Mate, could not agree more. Like the guy who wrote about Mark Ramprakash playing in his team last week wanted to remain anonymous, and William Stephen is... He's happy about this. He's just, I literally, this is a cry for help. He doesn't want the Chop King.
I mean, he must be a really good looking bloke to like have the security and strength to be called Chop King and just question whether he needs to own. I mean, he's the Chop King without even wanting.
Yeah, mate, he's the most normal person that's probably written into #ICGC. He doesn't want the title Chop King. I mean, you have to want it. It becomes your identity. You know, you can have very little else going on, but being the Chop King is your thing. You have to embrace it wholly, and so you. you know, if you have a cerebral thought about, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing for me in my life, well, then that's not the role of the Chop. The Chop King is purely to rack up as many sexual conquests as possible, solely for the benefit of fitting in with the boys in the stretching circle. Now, as you rightly say, Pez, there's way too many sexual exploits happening on cricket squares. I don't know why that's a thing. You know, I've got my own stories about that. Not me personally, just you know, being around it, seeing it happen over the years.
I've just been around it, mate.
I tell you a story. There was like a lock in at my club. This was probably close to 15 years ago now. One of the guys organised a stripper. So this was like in the first grade home dressing room, and all boys, obviously, nothing. Nothing more homoerotic than just all boys just locking themselves into a club dressing room, drinking the fridges dry, and then organising a stripper to come around to entertain the boys. I saw some really horrible things that I lost a lot of respect for that night. But then the guy who organised the stripper then had sex with her underneath the covers of the first grade square. So that's what it was like playing grey cricket in the early 2000s. good stuff. So yeah, mate, it's all good stuff. William, you know the answer. The answer's right there in front of you. You know, it's a bit of C, it's a bit of B. Quick cricket, get massive is obviously the go-to thing. I don't know how many times I need to.
Never heard of someone who wants to get out of being the Chop King, and I applaud it.
Well, I don't know how old he is.
Okay,
he's
wise beyond his years. Yeah. Even if he was,
I'm
80.
Still in it.
Ben Van Zelst writes in. Sounds like a real name too. Dear hashtag ask TGC, I successfully convinced my housemate to commit to playing cricket with me next season in an attempt to ruin his life. After inviting him to come watch a couple of games and have a few nets with me last season, he was very keen and purchased all the gear in preparation for season 2019-20. But after listening to your podcast and hearing of some of the goings on inside the four walls of a cricket club, he's now unsure. In particular, recent episodes about getting pissed on in the shower and the general idea of getting his cock out in front of the boys has made him question his decision. With the aim of dragging him down to my level of misery during the summer and filling the lonely void in the pit of my stomach, I simply cannot let him back down. So I ask, do I? Promise him a Hail Mary contract that the club simply wouldn't pay to a bloke who hasn't played since under 13s. Walk in on him in the shower and urinate on his leg to show him that it's not that bad. Quit cricket and live out my life knowing that I never accumulated the coveted Triple C. Thanks, guys. Ben.
Well, I mean, there's like 0.1% of the population who've ever done the Triple C, so there's no harm in being part of the, you know, 99.9% of the population there. Why would you bring your friends to play cricket? I mean, this is not dissimilar to Tim's question, like bringing other people down with you to make yourself feel better. Ben, I love the energy of wanting to get out there and, you know, engage in the community, but unfortunately this is Australian grade cricket and that's just not what you do. It's all about alphadom. It's making yourself feel better, to feel those lonely nights, to have purpose, to find purpose in your days, and that's why people play cricket way too long. I don't know why you hate your housemate that much. Maybe there's like some, you know, an issue going on with leaving the fridge doors open, cupboards open, not washing up, not taking the bins out. Maybe this is like payback redemption. So to get him back, really fuck him over by making him pay like $600 to play cricket, drive you around the state and to average, 7.36. I don't know. I think you'd all be happy if you chose a different pursuit. But yeah, good luck for the upcoming season.
I've nothing further to add, Mr. Sweeney.
That's another great cricket episode in the books. We'll be back on Friday morning, Australia time, Thursday night, UK time, to probably dissect what exactly happened in this game as we think about it more. The World Cup is just getting crazier and crazier, and Australia, well, they're going to win the World Cup again. See you next time.